You are listening to. First Gen Teachers Lens.
Hey everyone, welcome back to the First Gen Teacher Lens. So it's been a while since I did an episode, but we're back. I decided to take a hiatus. I know I've been saying that last couple episodes, but this time it was intentional for getting more Latinx guests on the podcast, because that is the reason why I started the podcast, to get more Latinx voices out there and into the stratosphere of the podcast realm within education. So in our episode back, I speak with Sergio, a former childhood educator who is now the director of product design and lead cultivation for a non-for-profit. He talks about why he transitioned from the teaching field into the non-for-profit sector, and talks about why Latinx representation is important. So stay tuned and don't forget to like and subscribe to the podcast. Peace.
This podcast is a proud member of the Teach Better Podcast Network. Better today, better tomorrow, and the podcast to get you there. You can find out more at teachbetter.com/podcasts. Now let's get back to the episode.
Hey everyone, welcome back to the First Gen Teacher Lens. My name is Mr. C. I am the host of First Gen Teacher Lens. It's been a while since we did a podcast, but I decided that I'm trying to get more Latinx teachers in the field. So in today's episode, I have Sergio, who's going to introduce himself.
Well, first of all, thank you for having me. My name is Sergio Jara Arroyos. I'm the director of product design and lead cultivation with Bluenson at the moment, but I've been in education for the last 10 years. Started as a pre-K educator, and now I work in nonprofit management. So I'm excited to be able to provide some of my insights.
Thanks so much, Sergio, for being a guest on the First Gen Teacher Lens podcast. So I want to get into your experience with Latinx teachers growing up. What was that like?
Yeah, when I look back, honestly, it's tough to identify a Latinx teacher in my elementary, middle, and high school experience. I think the teacher that comes to mind is the ESL teacher, the English as a second language teacher that I had in middle school. What's baffling about this is I grew up in Washington State in a community with a huge migrant population, a lot of families working in the fields, and Spanish and other languages were very, very common. And the context in which I can think of the first Latinx teacher was those ESL classes.
Yeah, it's I think you mentioned earlier about exactly where those ESL classes were compared to yesterday when we spoke, where they were. Can you talk about that a little bit?
No, yeah. The ESL classes were not in the main building. They were in the portables, they were outside. All the mainstream English classes were in the main building. So it was very clear. There's this visual division. Students knew, educators knew, people just knew the classes that were taking place out in the portables. I remember looking at my schedule and one of my friends asked me, like, what classes do you have? And common thing, you're with your friends, you're figuring out if you're going to have the same classes or not. And I was like, oh, I have some ESL classes, and their response like, oh, you're in the portables and the outside classes. Like, yeah. So it became a thing that people just knew.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and then I think that's interesting to state where we are thinking about the distance between portables and the main building, right? Separate, I want to say physical spaces, right? What does that mean for not only the staff who's teaching there, but for the students, like another form of isolation, which is often how I felt growing up in terms of my own Latinx experience with teachers. You know, there's very seldom of us out there, and that connection of the disconnect between being incorporated in the main building was definitely impactful for me to see, oh, this is how we're carrying on with like our fellow Latinx students and staff. And then I want to move into how you found yourself in the educational field, right? You spoke about how you're in this position now, but before you were a pre-K teacher, how did you find yourself in that realm?
Yeah, I'll start by saying that I never thought that I was going to be in education. I remember being an undergrad and changing my major to education. I was like, I don't think this is what I'm going to do. I don't think this is what I want to be doing. And along the way, I came to the realization that my family had immigrated to this country with the hopes that their future kids would have access to a great education, right? They came from Mexico, where my mother is 6th grade level of education, my father 3rd grade level of education. And education was just one of those things that was the priority along the way. And sadly, my family, like many other families, trusted this education system just by the distance up. The building was nice. The teachers were there. A combination of different elements that just said, this is a quality education because of how nice the building looks. And in making that realization, I had to humble myself. You know, I wasn't expecting to go and be in the classroom. And I had this opportunity to be in the classroom all of a sudden. I started with a program called Teach for America. I got placed in Tulsa, Oklahoma, where I taught pre-K. And all of a sudden, I was surrounded by 24-year-old students. And at first, I went back and forth if this was the thing that I wanted to be doing or not, and then quickly realized how much I enjoyed working with students and parents.
Mm-hmm. Right. So you started off with TFA and then you moved into pre-K. What was that transition like in terms of, like, you know, not or fully integrating yourself in the classroom? Was that a hard transition, or did you find yourself, you know, kind of adjusting as you went along with the career?
Yeah, I can't say that it got easier, because it doesn't, right? Because every year comes with its own different challenges. Every year comes with its own set of just different things in front of you. But at that moment in time, I was aware that I at times was not the most prepared educator. And I also was aware that I was willing to listen to families, to engage with families, speak with families in Spanish, and learn a little bit more about what they need, their expectations, and also how they wanted to engage and what that looked like. And while I wasn't expert in some elements, my willingness to engage in other elements allowed me to navigate and provide an educational experience for students and for parents that met their needs and hopefully exceeded their expectations along the way too.
And I think what I'm noticing now that I'm in the field, this is my 6th year, a lot of teachers left, and you yourself left this space of being inside the classroom. What made you find other career options outside of education, right? Because, you know, a lot of people say that, oh, it's not just a job. When you quit, you're quitting the relationship between the kids, parents, etc. admin, but what made you want to find another career option?
It wasn't easy being in the classroom. I really did enjoy working with students and families, and I loved being in a pre-K setting. The reality was that I was the first in my family to go to college, and I took out too many like private student loans. I didn't know necessarily what those were and what that meant. I just knew that I needed the money to get the degree. That was the end goal, get the degree.
Right.
And here I am all of a sudden in a teaching position, pre-K, getting paid about $33,000 a year. And in my mind, that is a lot of money, let me tell you.
Right.
My parents' combined income as farm workers was a little under $30,000 a year. And they supported a family of five, right? So in my mind, I was like, okay, $33,000 is a lot. I'll be able to like to sustain, manage, and do the things. And all of a sudden, I needed to pay back those loans that I took out. And it required working 2 to 3 jobs. It required like being able to do all these other things. And I was in a position where I was like, I either can stay and do what I love, or I leave and I pay off my debt. And I left. I left because I didn't see that reality being feasible for me.
I think you touched upon a pivotal reason why teachers are leaving. I myself thought of leaving in terms of like the overall field, not necessarily because of money, because, you know, depending where you're at, you get paid more in terms of statewide, but it's just the overall value of the career, right? You think about how teachers are devalued. Right. And that goes in hand with payment, too, with like, why aren't we paid as professionals if we have all these certifications, go through these trainings, et cetera, just like any other professional does, like a lawyer, you think about it. They go through the bar exam and they're paid their due diligence for doing the service. We're doing a service as well. And I think it's important that you touched upon that, because not only a lot of teachers in general are leaving, but the impactful teachers from various backgrounds, specifically brown and black teachers, Latinx teachers. In what ways can we get more Latinx teachers in the field, and then, or rather retain them?
Yeah, it's a tough sell. Let's start there, right? We really need to be rethinking around how is it that we're shifting the conditions, not only to recruit, but also to retain. We often, as we're thinking of like, how is it that we're recruiting more individuals? You can't escape that element of pay. People are looking into that. People are also looking into what are the working conditions. What is it that this is that? And what is this? What is this that it isn't as well? It's worth like noting and being able to showcase a range of that. But another element of being able to recruit is being able just to provide a pathway for career mobility. The teaching profession at times, when you think about impact, it's like you are an educator and you do it well, and you commit to your students and your families. And if you want to continue growing, it might be in a leadership position as a principal, a combination of different roles, right? And while that is true, there's also other roles that support an education ecosystem where we need a lot of Latinx and BIPOC representation, right? We can't be pigeonholed or positioned as educators of color being the implementers and never the strategists. We need those voices, those mindsets that are aware, that can rethink, restructure, and redesign our current education system, versus we need this immediate element so we can at times check off the box when I look back at every school leader that I worked for, they were all white. And that posed its challenges, right? I don't know how many times you've been questioning your education career around your commitment to brown and black communities, but as a Latinx leader, I've been questioned by white leaders one too many times in all reality. And how am I supposed to stay in the communities in the context that I grew up in, wanted to be an educator, being questioned by those in power around my commitment to these same communities?
No, I think you've raised some valid points in terms of the need, right? How are we going to give back to the community if the community isn't in these upper echelon positions of power, right? There's a hierarchy, right? Because oftentimes, and myself in this classroom still too, like this year, I specifically bonded with a kid. He happens to be half Salvadorian. I'm myself and Salvadorian. And it's just the cultural rapport that, like, it's deeper than just a teacher-student relationship now, because we understand little slangs in Spanish and, like, culture of food. So I understand what you're saying in terms of, you know, it's important to not only be in part of this leadership, but also have more folks that are representative of the community at large to provide the needs for that community. And that's very important. And I like what you said about being implementators and then strategists as well. We're always implementing, but we're never included in the strategy, right? We got to manifest that. And by manifesting that is allowing gateways until for what you're saying, like, so career mobility, which is important because a lot of teachers definitely feel stagnant. And then one of my final questions is, you know, we talked about Latinx teachers leaving, BIPOC teachers leaving in droves. You can see that across the United States. We saw it after the pandemic. But what is the initial importance, or the why is it important to have a Latinx teacher, not just for the students who happen to be Latinx, but for all children?
It's imperative, you know? It's one of those things which, like, it shouldn't be the ceiling, it should be the baseline. All students should have access to educators that are representative of their identity markers, if that is Latinx, if that is other identifiers as it relates to race and ethnicity. That is of importance. You should be able to see yourself in those roles. It really shifts the paradigm. And as you're having these conversations, you're able to engage in a way that feels proximate, because you see yourself in those communities and then they see yourself in those roles. And I can't unremember this memory, right, of like when I walked into the classroom and I was wearing a tie and all my students were like, whoa, what is that? Why are you wearing a tie? Mind you, these are 5-year-old students. And I was like, oh, let me explain what this is and what this isn't. And then we started having this broader conversation of like, what do you want to be when you grow up? And students being able to share and to be able to reaffirm that they can do that, and to be able to see someone in a role like that. And then along the way, as students are sharing, I want to be a doctor, I want to be a lawyer, I want to be this. As an educator, being able to identify other Latinx leaders or leaders of color in some of those fields so they can see themselves in those roles is imperative. Students should be set up in a way that they are not having to beat the odds, but where we're changing the odds for students, and having Latinx educators, educators of color in front of them is part of that equation.
No, I think you're absolutely right. Not only representation, but the affirmation, right? Which you've been speaking a lot about, to affirm these students. Hey, I myself am in this. You know, there's a position of power between student to teacher, and it took me a while to get here. But
you can do the same. Like I was once in your shoes. I was once in a classroom, mm-hmm. not too far removed from where you are now. So that affirmation is definitely needed in terms of, you know, having Latinx teachers or BIPOC teachers be represented throughout. And it breaks some culture barriers, right? Because you get to interact mm-hmm. with different cultures if you're in that position of power. But Sergio, I want to thank you for being a guest on the First Gen Teacher Lens. Before we end off, where can people find you in terms of contact?
Yeah, I can be reached on LinkedIn, Sergio Jara Arroyos, and then on Instagram as Jara Arroyos, and then there I am, findable and searchable.
Again, Sergio, I want to thank you for being a guest on the podcast. For anybody's listening, you can like and subscribe to the podcast, leave a comment, and don't forget to check out this new episode. Thanks so much, Sergio, for being a guest.
Thank you for having listened to the First Gen Teacher's Lens. We'll see you here next time.